From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made a week before the Democratic National Convention. The list of speakers had been finalized, and former President Barack Obama was preparing his remarks to be delivered on the convention's third night. And he told his team he wanted to do a section of his speech on zoning law. This was kind of a record scratch moment. Zoning law, as in zoning in American cities? Obama said, yes, he's been reading a lot. He's been thinking a great deal about this. He thinks Democrats have made some mistakes in the governance of cities, and he thinks it's time to tackle this issue head on. Now, fast forward a week, here's what Obama actually said at the convention about housing policy.
We can't just rely on the ideas of the past. We need to chart a new way forward to meet the challenges of today. And Kamala understands this. She knows, for example, that if we want to make it easier for more young people to buy a home, we need to build more units and clear away some of the outdated laws and regulations that made it harder to build homes for working people in this country. That is a priority, and she's put out a bold new plan to do just that.
All right, so that was the convention, but his chief speechwriter, Jon Favreau, not the actor, the speechwriter, says that Obama was kind of disappointed that his team talked him out of getting even wonkier. Here's Jon Favreau talking on the Bulwark podcast with Tim Miller about how badly Obama wanted to get into zoning policy. Let's listen.
No, that whole section was him wanting to say, look, and he's done this in his speeches when he was a nominee, which is like, we can't just be tied to like old ideas of the past and also think that we like as Democrats and liberals and progressives, like we have a monopoly on all the ideas and that, you know, we've never done anything wrong. And he, you know, originally he went on this whole thing about like, it's a lot of Democratic cities that have zoning laws. And I was like, we're not writing zoning laws in the speech.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Something interesting is happening. Zoning is typically a pretty dry subject, despite what our guest today will tell you. It's usually dry. They try to make it kind of spicy. And you know what? President Obama thinks so. After watching a short film that you can see tomorrow night at the Little, I now tend to agree. So we're going to be talking this hour about zoning. If you think that's dry enough to change, hang with us for a second, because this is important. This really matters. When you talk about how our cities and our suburbs and our society is laid out and why we have some of the problems we do and where the resources go, where the resources flow, where the sort of the imbalances are, it may not be what it looks like. And the film that we're going to talk about will help illustrate that. It's an upcoming Rochester Streets film event tomorrow night starting at 6:30 at The Little. We'll tell you all about that and more with our guests who are here. The Director of Policy and Advocacy for Reconnect Rochester is Cody Donahue, back with us. Hello, Cody. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Evan. Thank you for having me back.
Great to have you. Kevin Kelly, Manager of City Planning for the City of Rochester. Welcome back to you.
Thank you, Evan. It's great to be here.
And Miguel Velazquez is the CEO of RTS. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Pleasure to be here.
So, Cody, what's coming up tomorrow night here?
Tomorrow night, we have the 2024 edition of Rochester Street Films. That's Reconnect Rochester's signature event. And as you have said, this year we kind of hit on this topic of the sprawl effect. And zoning is certainly part of the conversation that we're hoping to have tomorrow night and we are having today. But, you know, we see this topic of the sprawl effect as a way of looking at how we grow and how we use our land in the face of intersecting local challenges with what we see as, you know, Reconnect Rochester, transportation at the center of those intersecting challenges such as poverty, housing, structural racism, the climate crisis, and scarce public dollars for competing infrastructure priorities.
It all weaves together. The film is what, 28 minutes?
28 minutes.
Yeah. It's a svelte 28 minutes. They have packed a lot in to 28 minutes. I watched it this morning, and I was very impressed. I mean, I you know, for my work, have to think a lot about issues like this, but the illustrations in this, we're not going to talk too much about visual things on a radio program, but the illustrations are really powerful. It's a very, very effective film, and I would encourage anyone who wants to just kind of get wonky and really learn, just learn about how this affects our city, our suburbs, our society. It's a great place to start. So it starts at 6:30 at The Little tomorrow. A good conversation, I'm sure, will follow. But come on, Cody, if President Obama had gotten into zoning at the DNC, you probably would have been like in that category. People were like, yes, let's go. More zoning.
I can't believe President Obama said exclusionary zoning at the Democratic National Convention. That was a real moment for me. Having read the Zoning Alignment Project draft more than a few times, and you know, Reconnect Rochester put in our thoughts on what we could do to maximize the land use that we have, especially along the transit-rich corridors. You know, because, you know, some of this conversation is just kind of inspiring ourselves to think differently about the opportunities that come up to connect people to jobs, to resources, to amenities, where the transit system already runs. How can we have transit supportive development patterns that make it possible to take the bus to go get groceries or use active transportation on your bike to take your kids to daycare, for example? So, you know, hearing that, I could listen to President Obama talk about just about anything, but I would definitely listen to him talk about zoning for an hour.
You're nodding over there, Kevin. We missed an opportunity at the DNC, I guess.
Yeah, zoning is in fact spicy.
It is spicy. Come on. Miguel, zoning is spicy?
If they say so. I go whatever they say.
And so is transit planning, right?
Absolutely.
Transit planning is definitely spicy. Well, I mean, so this is where a lot of things start to intersect, and we're going to talk this hour about parts of what the film are going to bring and why they'd love to see you there tomorrow, but also what it means for our community going forward. And there is a lot of intersection. It's not just, you know, where the resources flow. It's also on when transportation policy changes, what do you start to see develop around new transportation options that go beyond just an automobile? And again, the illustration that you'll see in the film, it's intuitive, but it's still, to me, Cody, very powerful to see the way that this is visualized. What do you think?
I think it's really interesting that, you know, and I get into the history in the presentation a little bit, you know, around 1950, the automobile suddenly became ubiquitous. Most American families had an automobile for the first time. And it was around that time that we were building the federal interstate highway system. And it was possible for people to live not where they worked for the first time. They could drive their car from a suburb into the downtown. And so that really changed our orientation to space and how we use space. And, you know, bringing it back to Monroe County, there was in 1970, we had a population of 600,000 in Monroe County. And our census-designated urbanized area was about 148 square miles. If you fast forward to 2020, our land use was 298 square miles for only 100,000 more people. We had 700,000 people in 2020. So we really spread out the amount of space that we were using. And, you know, at the same time, we didn't really change our transportation orientation until pretty recently. With the advent of Reimagine RTS, we started to look at things differently, like how do we update the bus system to recognize that not all jobs are downtown and there are different travel patterns. But we also started to say, hey, maybe we don't need this big giant inner loop going through downtown, and we strategically disinvested from that, and that's still a work in progress with the city.
Well, one of the big visual pops for me in this film is it's no secret that, you know, in the advent of the automobile, a lot of American cities are designed with grids. However, when the interstate system started to kind of affect not just the overlay of the grid, but the way we started to divide neighborhoods, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're not only a very grid-centric society, but you have entire neighborhoods cut off. And to see it visualized this way, I mean, that's Rochester too, right?
There's a story here of redlining and white flight that came with the interstate system. Our friends over at Our Local History, who you had on the show not too long ago, do a great job of telling that history through some of the policies and practices that we're seeing. And you know, today I think if you fast forward, we're still having this equity argument in a slightly different way. You know, something tomorrow I'm going to be talking about is, you know, sometimes these zoning meetings actually turn into kind of dog whistles for not wanting certain types of people to be in a certain neighborhood, you know, and sort of perpetuating that racist trend into current conversations about land use when we're talking about new things going up.
What do you think about, Kevin, when it comes to the way that our cities, Rochester included, have been affected this way.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of great sort of before and after pictures that show the impacts of interstate development on our cities. And Rochester is no different in seeing how, you know, portions of neighborhoods were just obliterated when these expressways were put in place. So we have some opportunities here with the Interloop Expressway downtown to undo those past mistakes and restore some really great urbanism. And I believe that we've done that with the first third of the Interloop, what we call Interloop East, and the removal of that sunken moat there and creation of a lot of land and new development that's sort of revitalized that side of downtown. And now we're looking at the northern side of downtown and what to do with the remainder of the Interloop.
What's the timeline for Interloop North?
So we completed a planning study, I believe in 2022, to kind of come up with a vision for what could be done to transform that corridor. And now we're in the middle of doing sort of a preliminary design process, but also taking a deeper dive into what might we do or encourage with the land that gets created once the expressway is removed. So the sort of the land use side of it, and as going with the theme of this program here, connecting that with our transportation goals as well, and how do we make better connections, for bicyclists and pedestrians. You know, we like to think of it as, you know, the Interloop Expressway tore the urban fabric, and we are looking to stitch that fabric back together by reconnecting the grid of streets that used to be there.
So the first day that I'm going to be able to set solid foot on solid ground in the north part is going to be what day?
Great question.
He loves this question.
Yeah. It's too far away to have an accurate date, but I think probably best case scenario is like 27, 28. You know, we're a few years out.
Sure.
There's a lot of steps left. And that's just,
but that's,
you know,
kinda,
that's just shoveling the ground to, yeah, you know, fill it in, so to speak. Then there's the creation of the development on that land, and that's another phase. So it's many years in the making.
And then is there going to be, you got east, north, is there going to be a western interloop forever?
Yeah, I mean, essentially that's the segment of 490 that
stays.
Occupies the...
That stays.
Yeah, there are no current plans to look at removing 490 through downtown, although that's, you know, it's interesting to see Syracuse looking at that with 81.
Yeah. And you say 3 to 4 years for Interloop North. I mean, that's not that far away.
It goes by quick.
Yeah. I mean, 2014, we were talking a lot about what goes in Interloop East. One of my favorite phone calls ever on this program was someone called and was like, you can't take the Interloop East out. I use it all the time and no one else is ever on it. I'm going, well, you might have just made a pretty good argument for Phil.
Yeah, red flag number one.
There right? It is. Yeah, there it is. But then it happened. So, I mean, yeah, it's coming. And I got to feel like, Miguel, you got a job. I'm not trying to run a little interference for RTS. I think it's a hard job because everyone's got an opinion on where your next route should go or how to redesign. How comfortable are you with where RTS currently goes and what are you looking at?
Well, there's always room for improvement, of course, and we're always looking at that. This is such a great topic because everywhere I go, everyone I talk to, I'm always trying to explain public transit, believe it or not, how it works, even though you may think that's obvious. But, you know, there's something called the 3 Ds in public transit, density, diversity, and design. And that's where public transit really, really works, is where you have density of people, density of jobs, density of destinations, healthcare in our case, diversity of those different destinations, and then, of course, design of the streets so they're safe and walkable. And so, you know, that density is key. And what we're talking about here is the opposite of that. And what has happened in many cities across the United States is that sprawl that has really affected people being able to really move around efficiently, and obviously have a good public transit system that gets them where they need to go.
So Miguel brought the word back up, sprawl. The film is The Sprawl Effect. And one of the really hopeful parts of it for me was seeing that, number one, a lot of the problems that the film addresses are pretty similar city to city and region to region because a lot of the policies and laws and regulations are the same, the zoning setup, et cetera. But there are outliers. There are places that are doing it differently and they're seeing different results. So the hopeful part for me is that, you know, inertia doesn't have to take us forever. Like, change is possible. And then you start to see the possible results of it, but it takes a lot of will. Yeah, Cody, go ahead.
May I say, I think Rochester has an incredible opportunity, and Monroe County more broadly, because we're in the midst of a lot of transformation right now. Like the Interloop North, and there's a lot of potential here. And you know, I will say with that we didn't want to be overly focused on the city. This is really an opportunity for the whole county, because some of the examples we show in the film show how you connect suburbs, how you connect village centers or town centers throughout an area using effective public transportation nodes and connections. So, you know, our vision here is, you know, you can't redo the suburbs and you can't impose a vision on a community, but you can do things smarter in the future and connect those downtown areas of towns or villages to each other, to the urban core, to the downtown of the city of Rochester, and promote vibrancy and economic activity along those transit corridors. So it's really transit-oriented development that will connect and further strengthen the nodes of economic development within the county. And then I would also link it to, you know, how are we going to get around upstate New York, Buffalo, Syracuse, and Rochester with this new tech hub corridor designation? We want to be able to, you know, collaborate with different companies that are in Buffalo or in Syracuse without greatly increasing vehicle miles traveled in our own personal vehicles. And that's where, you know, other things that our communities started to talk about, like high-speed rail or, you know, intercity buses being more efficient, that those connections need to be made too.
In a moment, I want to ask our guests if they all just want to explain, when you say the word sprawl, I think we know what we're talking about, but I want to hear our guests describe it. But briefly, if I had to kind of sum up the ethos of the film, or at least what I was left with, it was like, well, density is what we need. We need more density. And yet, density can be sometimes politically unpopular. You know, there are some communities that don't want more density for a number of reasons. And we saw that with Governor Hochul's attempted change to housing policy that was designed to affect every municipality in the state. And you had a lot of organization from suburbs and rural areas saying, you know, not us. It was very NIMBY. A lot of these leaders were saying, well, I'm representing our constituents. They don't want more density. They don't want more housing or dense housing. They don't want a mixed use. So am I oversimplifying there, Cody?
No, I think I address that too. Density can mean a lot of things. For example, you can have a single family home built on a small lot, but there are zoning codes that don't allow small lots to have those kind of size of single family homes. Density can mean townhomes as well. I think we have to move beyond the idea that density means a skyscraper of quote unquote affordable housing units. I think that, you know, that's something that would change quote unquote the character of an area, and that's something that that makes people afraid. But I think there's lots of different types and of density and walkability and configurations that you can do as long as the land use is permitted. And I think it's also a good, you know, a good chance to bring up this accessory dwelling unit idea. ADUs, also known as granny flats. Like, you know, I've got a big backyard. I've got a garage that's kind of falling down. Could I replace that with an accessory dwelling unit and then, you know, have the option of having a parent age in place in my backyard in a nice little home? Right now, that land use is not permitted in my zone where I live. And with the ZAP update, the zoning alignment project, that it still wouldn't be allowed in the draft code.
Do you want to add to that, Kevin?
Sure. Yeah. Accessory dwelling units is a really important issue. We hear quite a bit from folks. And by the way, you can learn more about this zoning project at rochesterzap.com, zoning alignment project. And yeah, we've definitely heard from a lot of folks that want to see more opportunities for those accessory dwelling units. And then we have definitely heard from folks that are concerned that they, if they see those coming into their neighborhoods, that, you know, gives the, you know, is sort of like additional density that's happening in their neighborhood. So we're trying to strike a balance, but essentially it's not really allowed right now in the current zoning code. So we've modified the code in the proposed draft that's still out there to allow that basically in pretty much all of our districts except one in the city. So except ADUs will be allowed in a lot more places moving forward in the proposed draft.
In the proposed draft.
Right.
Got to get over the finish line.
Exactly.
Is it going to get over the finish line?
I'm certainly hopeful. Yeah. We've completed a draft. Well, we completed a draft last year and put it out to the community for an additional round of comments and worked through those over the last several months, updated the draft to reflect some of those changes, and we'll hopefully soon be releasing the next draft, and then we'll start to go through the more formalized process of working with City Council and that sort of thing.
Come back. We'll talk about that here absolutely. As much as you want. And Christopher in Rochester, I'll take your call in a second. Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI for calling from Rochester, 263-9994, or email the program connections@WXXI.org. Kevin, why do you think the people who oppose ADU, accessory dwelling units, a grandmother's...
granny flat.
A granny flat. That's the term now. It's a granny flat, the in-laws, whatever you want to call it. Why do you think some people oppose it?
Well, I think some folks are concerned that if an ADU gets established in a situation that, like we're talking about, say in-laws have a nice little apartment attached to the back of the house, that's not a permanent condition because zoning does not control ownership. It only controls, speaks to use, right? So if that owner makes a space for their in-laws and then those in-laws eventually pass and that owner eventually sells the house, there's nothing in zoning that would stop a new owner from just basically turning that into another apartment with folks that they're not related to. That, in my opinion, is not in and of itself a bad thing, but I'm expressing what some folks have said is a concern that, you know, it could come in under one condition, but that's not a permanent condition.
Miguel Velasquez, CEO of RTS, how do you define sprawl?
For us, it's mainly having jobs far away.
that's an interesting way to think about it.
Is our number one issue. Our number one concern is job employers locating outside of our system, outside of our network, and then trying to get people there, especially low-income families from the city who are trying to get to those low-entry jobs. And so that's a top of mind. Obviously, that's not the definition of it, but that's what's top of mind for us at RTS because it's a big issue for us.
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, like, there's a moment in the film where they talk about the average commute to work, seven miles or so.
Mm-hmm.
And if you own a car, you might think, not a big deal. If you do not, it's an entirely different thing. So
yeah, job access is so important, and you know, commutes are going to be different depending on the city that you're in. You know, this goes back to an event in 2018 that I believe you were part of, Evan, on that Reconnect Rochester hosted on transportation and poverty. And in the report, which is available on reconnectrochester.org, you know, it said that 76% of workers do not work in the municipality where they live in Monroe County. So they're leaving their town to go to another town to be able to work. And, you know, depending on your access to a vehicle or your ability to pay for a vehicle, that can be a real burden to get from point A to point B every day on time and keep that job.
How do you define sprawl, Kevin Kelly?
Yeah, it's really kind of spreading out across the landscape in a low density sort of haphazard manner. And I think most folks, when they think of sprawl, they definitely think of a suburban environment. But I would say that it definitely relates to our rural environment as well. And I think it's important to consider, you know, that historically throughout all of human history, there was the model of town and country, right? Folks either lived in the town or they lived in the country. And in the town is where all the business was happening, and in the country is where agriculture was happening. It's really only in the last 70 or so years of all of human history that people have been living out in the country, out of the town, and not doing something productive with their land. That's a completely unique dynamic to the last 70 years. And that's not, you know, entirely bad in and of itself. The people have reasons for making that choice, and I completely understand that. But we have to acknowledge the implications and the impacts of that many people, millions and millions of people, living out in a far-flung, spread-out way and not necessarily doing anything productive with their land.
Yeah, that is, I think, such an important point. It is not to say that you want to take away people's freedom. People want to say, I want to be free to live where I want to live. I want to have the land that I want to have. But this change in function, what the land is for, and if you are not using it agriculturally or in a productive way, it has implications for how resources in society, where they flow and how we support that. I mean, do you want flowing water at your place? Do you want paved roads? And the film does a great job at depicting that resource flow. And it's tough. I mean, it's tough to, you know, sort of feel like it's continues to justify, I don't want to get moralizing. This is not my, not at all the point of this. I thought the film was powerful in that way. And what I want to do is after I take this only break, Chris, I'll take your call. Christopher in Rochester, I'll take your call. I've got some other comments I want to read. And I want to talk more about this film that has our attention that you can see tomorrow, The Sprawl Effect, starting at 6:30 at the Little Theater. Reconnect Rochester would love to see you. It's a 28-minute film. So, I mean, it's brisk, but then there's great discussion and really powerful themes there. So let's take this break. We'll come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, candidates for New York State Assembly from District number 130 join us. Both the Republican and the Democrat on the ballot will be with us in studio. In our second hour, the Police Accountability Board of Rochester has released a report, several dozen cases. There's been some backlash. We're going to talk to members of the PAB about the report and what they have learned. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Christopher in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, Christopher.
Good afternoon, everyone. I love me some RTS. Enjoy RTS all the way, especially when it's functional and when it works. And what they've done recently in the past couple of years is rethink. I'm somebody who's disabled. I have epilepsy. I cannot drive. So I live over on Bay and Webster Avenue area, Bedford, and it used to take me an hour and 20 minutes to take two different buses to get to the Southwest. With one magic stroke of a new bus system, number 41, I'm able to get to work in 20 minutes. And what I want the audience to think, if we have functioning public transportation system, then it untaxes the poor. And what I mean by that, my time, like anybody else, I'm sure Evan's time thinks his time is worth something. My time is worth something. If that hour and a half or hour and a quarter times two, to and fro, that's 2.5 hours or almost 3 hours that I freed up in my daily life that I get back. And so we need to examine how transportation can be of service to the community by bringing workers to the work site, by bringing people to the, you know, whether it's the pub or some other place to go out for a social engagement. But we really need to understand that a failed infrastructure with when it comes to transportation is a tax on the poor and the disabled.
You got a lot of nods in the studio, Christopher. Thank you. Let me ask our guests. I'll go around. I'll start with the CEO of RTS, Miguel Velazquez, if you want to respond to that.
Well, first, thanks for being a customer, first and foremost. Second, thank you for recognizing our positive changes and that has actually helped your daily commute and your daily life and the quality of life. And you're absolutely right. I mean, rethinking transportation, this is not a one thing, do it one time and, you know, you're done. We certainly are looking at our system constantly, what are improvement changes that we need to do. But a lot of that is driven by what we're talking about here, is driven by the landscape and where jobs are located, where people live, where people need to go, of course. And so not a simple task, something we look at every day, but I appreciate your comment.
Okay. Anything you want to add, Kevin Kelly?
Yeah, that's great to hear that story. And I think there's a lot of places in the city, most of the city really, that RTS serves really well. I think the challenge becomes going out into the suburbs and the service provided out there. And I hear often from, you know, friends and others that, you know, say, well, I would definitely take the bus if it would provide better service here out in this far-flung outer asteroid belt of the Rochester area that I live in. And yeah, that'd be nice if they could get a bus right to their house. But the reality is that land use pattern that they live in is very low density and it's haphazard, sprawling. So it's very difficult, short of, you know, an extensive amount of funding from the federal and state government to fund the local bus system. It's very difficult to get a system that serves high or, you know, very low density areas like that. So it's you know, I always come to the defense of RTS and say it's not really RTS's fault that it's difficult to provide service out there. It's the land use patterns that are just not conducive to you know, high frequency transit in those areas.
Cody?
I resonate with your comment, and you know, I would challenge anyone in a decision-making capacity, especially with locating businesses, to think about that comment that it's a time tax on poor people. I mean, your time is worth something. Your time to spend with your kids, your time to cook healthy meals or go grocery shopping. I mean, time is critically important. And what he said, I think, is super important, that his commute is suddenly 20 minutes to a job. I mean, that's amazing. And it supports one of the points in our film, which is if you locate jobs along transit-rich corridors, you are implementing an anti-poverty solution because you're allowing people to use a low-cost transportation option to get to your job in a timely manner.
Christopher, anything you want to add before I let you go?
Yeah, also on the other subject matter with regards to smaller pieces of housing on existing properties, having actually installed many furnace and pipes in my life before I became an accountant, the issue of infrastructure. I mean, in our house over in Bedford, we had to spend $9,000 to put a new lot line clean out and a new water main, okay? Not everybody could afford that. And then when you add more facilities to a property, we need to make sure that we fund it, that we fund the infrastructure to make it happen so we can have the mother-daughter suite, the grandmother, whatever that is. Because if we look back in the history of Rochester and look back at the market area during the pandemic of 1918, when, you know, huge families lived in a house where there were multiple people sharing bedrooms. We can do better. We can use the resources that we have, but we also need to fund the infrastructure that goes in the ground, because the city of Rochester, as you have seen, our pipes have a problem. And we need the sewage to work, and we need the water to work, and the electric to work. So if we can fund that too, then we can get a better use of property in real estate.
Thank you, Christopher. I don't think we have a whole lot of opposition to the points that he's making there. And again, a lot of these themes do get addressed in this film that you can see tomorrow night. It's a less than half an hour long, The Sprawl Effect, starting at 6:30 at the Little Theater. They would love to see you there. Thank you for that, Christopher. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of those themes in just a moment. I do want to squeeze in Wendy from Rochester and her call. Hi, Wendy, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to put in another issue. I had a long talk with Doug Rice, who is absolutely brilliant on how to build community. He's kind of the ad hoc mayor of the Neighborhood of the Arts. And one of the things he said that I thought was pretty interesting was that, you have these arterials that have had really good commercial arterials that have been underused while everything moved out to these big malls and stuff. And that if you allowed commercial buildings to revert to residential, if there is no commercial tenant available, that would help. And then you could have, this can be commercial, but it doesn't have to be. And that just seemed like a good way to develop more housing, too. And I have to say, I think we really have to think about this in Rochester, because it's a question of density or of not taking in our brothers and sisters who are going to have to move off the coasts. As we're seeing in Florida, it's not going to be sustainable to live in some places. And so we need to think how we want this city to be. It could get gentrified out of all of our ability to pay if we only allow the wealthy to move to these places that are still sustainable. We really have to think this through.
Wendy, thank you for the phone call. The manager of city planning for the city of Rochester is Kevin Kelly. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great point, in particular about making sure that your zoning is flexible enough to allow both residential and commercial uses in those corridors. Traditionally here in Rochester, just conversationally, but also officially, we refer to those corridors as commercial corridors, your Monroe Aves, your Dewey Aves, and that sort of thing. Through the zoning alignment project, we're looking to reposition those corridors and rebrand them as mixed use corridors. And when we say mixed use, to building off the conversation that Cody had about density, is an important term too. Mixed use means combining commercial and residential, not just combining different kinds of shops, right? Mixed use needs to have commercial and residential. So we want to make sure that more of our city is mixed use in nature with the zoning. We're actually adding close to 1,000 acres of land in the city to our mixed use zoning districts in this proposed zoning alignment project. So we're looking to address that. And I think it's also important to understand when we talk about a mix of uses, it could apply to both a building and a neighborhood. A mixed-use building typically has commercial on the first floor and apartments above it. But you can also live in a mixed-use neighborhood, which maybe the buildings are only commercial on the main street and surrounded by houses. So I live in a mixed-use neighborhood where I'm, you know, it's mostly single-family homes around me, but I could walk very easily to lots of shops and restaurants. So that's a mixed-use neighborhood. It's important to look at sort of both of those environments.
Well, let's talk more about this. So the reason that I think zoning is sexier than a lot of people think is it really does affect how you live, where you live, and the circumstances so much more than you typically. We're not usually thinking about zoning. So if you live in a suburb right now, and I don't know how often you've thought about, you know, the streets that you're on, like what's allowed to be built there? What has been historically allowed to be built there? What are those zoning regulations right now? There has been an intentional set of choices to separate residential from commercial, to not mix the use, and for people who have more means to kind of go farther and farther out to, they can afford a car, they can live away from mixed use or commercial corridors, and they can get there if they want to get there. The difference, of course, is that when you start to see, yes, I think one of the, Christopher might have brought up infrastructure, pipes, plumbing, literally bridges, roads, everything that goes into how we fund and how people are supported, it's off balance here. And I want to go around the table and talk about the balance here, because I don't know, Cody, I watched that film and the way it's illustrated, I'm going, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about what subsidizes what here, but it's not always the story that is stereotyped. It's not always the story that we assume, right?
I think the clip you're thinking of is kind of a taxation analysis, and it looks at the value per acre. So value meaning like how much tax revenue does a particular parcel generate for a city, comparing two different types of development. So kind of your old historical neighborhood with density and mixed uses, maybe your coffee shop on the corner that has a couple of apartment buildings above it. Comparing that to kind of a taco restaurant that is car centric, you know, it's got a drive through, got some parking, and you know, kind of built in that typical suburban plaza style, and the analysis turns out that the mixed use historic neighborhood, although you know it may not look as nice as the newer stuff, it was generating more tax revenue per acre than the kind of suburban restaurant with a parking lot attached to it. So I think there is an analysis there that we would like to do as kind of the future of this conversation, looking at the where are the productive areas of our city and can we build more things like that. There was a recent study that came out that said that, you know, this kind of mixed use development pattern also reduces greenhouse gas emissions because you're kind of getting more things in a smaller footprint, and people tend to leave their car at home when they have access to those kind of mixed use developments. The great thing about those, especially if we bring it to Rochester and Monroe County, the along the commercial corridors, as we've called them colloquially, they tend to be transit rich. They tend to be along the bus lines that already exist. And so, you know, you have the option of leaving your car at home, and you have the option of walking or biking. But I think, you know, one of the challenges here is that it's not often a lot cheaper to retrofit an old building. Sometimes it actually has a lot of challenges that come along with it. I read about the Gannett building retrofit in the Rochester Business Journal, and that was fascinating that they've turned that, you know, into apartments right in the heart of downtown. That's really cool. It seemed like maybe there were, you know, I would love to see the balance sheet on that and like what was the cost and what were some of the issues that they ran into. But you have that kind of project happening, and then you also have, you know, I'll just pick on Henrietta a little bit and say the Shake Shack that was built out on Jefferson Road. It was like a empty land, and then, you know, overnight there was a Shake Shack built on it. And I'm kind of scratching my head, like, do we need another one of these kind of drive-through restaurants, you know, out here, where you know, basically it's only people with cars who are going to be able to access it.
So this is what I'm thinking about with RTS. I'm thinking about sprawl and where RTS is, I presume, and Miguel, I've talked to a lot of your predecessors and your colleagues over the years about this. The public kind of will sometimes say, well, if RTS just goes somewhere, then jobs will follow it. As opposed to like RTS is going to go where the jobs are, go to where the people need to go. And the way I'm thinking about it now is you think about these big plazas, retail plazas, or malls. Think about Marketplace Mall in Henrietta as an example that's changed a lot.
We're sorry, Henrietta. We keep picking on
you. I'm not trying to pick on Henrietta. I've learned over the years, do not pick on Henrietta. There's a lot of very proud Henrietta listeners, and I love you guys, and I love the fact that people care about their towns. And so, but Henrietta is something that people associate with a lot of retail, but also potentially jobs, plazas, et cetera. The difference now is what happens when the retail hollows out and goes away. Can you retrofit it? Number one, is it feasible for somebody who wants to do it? But number two, what does the zoning say? And I wonder if some of the societal change, our malls are going away, our retail plazas are going away, are going to force us to say, we have this big space, but we've got to make change here. We've got to create mixed use, because if we don't, nothing is sort of left here. And maybe, you know, RTS will continue to follow those trends. Is the chicken and egg question to you, Miguel? I mean, you're smiling, but do you go where the jobs are? Is there ever a world where you say, you know, this is where we should go, and then the jobs will follow this? That probably wouldn't work.
Yeah, we're not there for sure. I mean, we definitely try to get where things are. And then hopefully, Cody said it a couple of times, you know, then along those corridors, then you want to incentivize development. Because that obviously has this effect of just growth, and it helps us as a public transit. It helps the community, it helps that economy as well. Listen, I would say at the end of the day, transportation is very expensive. And what I mean by that is expensive whether you own your own car or you take public transit. Public transit is expensive. You own your own car, the APTA, National Association, Transportation Association, calculates that it's about $13,000 a year for someone to maintain and own a car. Some other figures that you may hear is that it could be up to a third of someone's income to own a car. For us to run public transit, it's very expensive. It was said earlier, I don't know if it was Cody, but you know, we have these jobs and neighborhoods and suburban development happening, which is very sexy because it promotes construction and jobs, and you know, everybody wants this growth. And there's a lot of subsidy around, like you said, you want running water, you want electricity. There is not even close a level of subsidy for transportation to then provide that service as well. So that's part of the, I mean, we have been, public transportation across the nation, not just here in upstate New York, has been underfunded for decades. And we're trying to just catch up at this point. And we would love to go to a million different places and make sure people can get to their jobs or residences or services, whatever it may be. But it is the level of investment is needed in order for us to do that. It cost us around and I love the caller earlier, because now this person getting to her destination or work in 20 minutes. One thing that we learned through Reimagine is that people need frequency. That's when it really, really works, is you need to have a frequent route. That's when what makes it convenient. For us to have every 30 minutes, which is not ideal by any stretch of the imagination, but for us to run a 30-minute route, it costs us around $3 million a year. And so it is a big expense, but it needs the investment in order for it to work.
Kevin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I think this is where you see land use and transportation intersecting, right? And if I could relate to that to what we're dealing with in the city, it's a little bit of a different scale. But we really, this was a goal identified in the Rochester 2034 comprehensive plan adopted back in 2019, identified this clear issue that we need to align our land use and our transportation goals. And there's a really tangible example of that we're working on fixing right now. And that is that if you look at our transit corridors across the city, there are many stretches of those corridors, your Hudson's, your Portland's, that sort of thing, where the current zoning is our lowest density zoning district. That's misaligned. We need to switch that, and we need to encourage and increase more density along those transit corridor lines. So in the proposed draft of the zoning alignment project, we're doing just that, and what we call upzoning, which is changing it to a different zoning district that allows more a longer list of uses and more diversity, more flexibility. So we're trying to do that with a zoning code, and there's two really big benefits to that. One, if more people live on those corridors, those folks now have more transportation choices. They could walk, they could bike, they could drive if they happen to own a car, or they could take the bus. And two, we're adding more riders to the transit system, and the more funding we could provide to our transit system, the chances are higher that we can expand that system to serve more residents. So we really need to align those goals and rezone those districts.
Cody, you said earlier this hour that, you know, the suburb, I want to paraphrase what you said, and then you're going to correct me. But I think you said essentially, you know, we can't really totally change the suburbs. But there's a lot we could do in urban centers, and there's a lot we can learn about how we, you know, maybe evolve our policies. I think there's a lot of change that's possible in the suburbs, and maybe I was misinterpreting you. But also, I do think about the way these plazas and these retail centers are going to be hollowed out or are hollowing out. And I wonder if it's going to force people's hands and force suburbs' hands and say, we're going to allow more mixed use. Like, that we have to. We have to be more flexible. We have to kind of get rid of the NIMBY approach to this and get more in the YIMBY camp. Is that possible?
So go from not in my backyard to yes in my backyard. Yeah. I think we see this at Reconnect Rochester as an opportunity for Monroe County. We're in a phase of growth where we can make a lot of these choices intentionally. I think, you know, Kevin said it about sprawl earlier. It's haphazard growth, not smart growth. It's not doing things intentionally. And I think we have a lot of opportunities to do things intentionally. And if we're talking about urbanized area, you know, I said earlier we're up to 292 square miles of urbanized area in Monroe County, doubled since 1970. You know, urbanized means also town centers and village centers. We're not just talking about the city of Rochester. We're talking about urbanized areas all around Monroe County. And, you know, there are models. There's a film from Ontario, Canada that we cite that shows how the transit system there connects the suburban neighborhoods to the main transit lines, you know, similar to, let's say, the Penfield line, or, you know, any number of lines, the Empire Boulevard line number 7, you know, connecting those dense urban walkable town centers and village centers to activity. And, you know, as far as being able to make, you know, different choices or retrofit uses, I certainly think that that's something that I hope people are thinking about. But there is a big challenge. You talked about Governor Hochul's plan earlier. The way New York State law works out, every municipality has home rule when it comes to zoning. So there's 30 municipalities in Monroe County, and they're all going to be making their own decisions. And that's the right thing, I think. You know, it's local decisions for local issues. But, you know, helping to have a kind of common vision as a region of what we want to be and how we move forward and how we deal with the oncoming challenges for the next 10, 20 years is, you know, a conversation I hope we keep having.
All right, let me try to squeeze as much feedback as I can here. Barbara says, has the planning group discussion included any thought about the future of sprawl connecting suburbs and city by public transportation and the future of education in our city and suburbs? That is, though a county school district will likely never be approved because, in general, suburban folk don't want infiltration of city students or their students attending school in the city. The goals of the zoning group may be similar to those heading to work from various places for ease and inclusivity. So, you know, Barbara seems to be observing some of the reason that sprawl has happened. And that's, we could talk all day about it, but there's definitely reasons of racism and intentional, the choice that people have made for exactly what Barbara's describing. And I wonder if what she's bringing up here makes it more difficult or is there common ground to be found here? What do you think, Cody?
I would agree that a lot of the local zoning conversations tend to wander into racist tropes and assumptions about certain types of people moving in, or, you know, taking over a town. I think we've seen that play out on the national stage with some unfortunate comments, you know, in the presidential race about Ohio, Springfield, Ohio. You know, I think it goes back to the challenge I just cited. There's 30 different municipalities. They're all making their own rules. They have their own planning in Monroe County. And because of New York state law, there are limitations to like a regional approach to planning or resource sharing. You can do intermunicipal agreements, but we can't really wholesale adopt the model that they use in Portland, Oregon, or Kansas City, Missouri, where you do a lot of regional planning kind of countywide and then associate other counties.
Carly wants to know how much of our misalignment is due to redlining. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, certainly redlining is a rather unfortunate, to put it mildly, part of our past here in the city of Rochester and is true for most cities in the United States. So we are dealing with the effects of that, and we're looking for ways to reverse that trend and try and reinvest in our neighborhoods. But it's not just a matter of executing based on a principle that you have or a goal that you have. There is a lot to overcome with our past and with our history, as the previous comment illustrated, that it's complicated and there's gets difficult because of our past.
And I want to say there's been a number of emails about how RTS does things. Miguel, some are a little far afield. Come back on a different day and we'll just talk about the future of RTS, if you don't mind.
We'd love to do that.
We would love to do that. And that way we'll open it up for listeners because RTS has always been great about welcoming feedback and trying to learn more about what people want and how to serve the public. So we'll do that with Miguel on a different day. Cody, 20 seconds. Tell people about tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, Reconnect Rochester Street Films, The Sprawl Effect, 6:30 p.m. at the Little Theater 1. And you can get tickets at the door so you don't have to RSVP ahead.
And again, it's a 28-minute film, and it packs a lot in there. Cody is Director of Policy and Advocacy for Reconnect Rochester. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Kevin Kelly, Manager of City Planning for the City of Rochester. Thank you, sir.
Great to be here.
And Miguel Velasquez, CEO of RTS. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And from all of us at Connections, Mari and Evan and Megan and Rob saying thank you for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.